It's Ask the Expert with attorneys Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO. Ask your legal questions by calling the show at 707-636-1350.
Hi, folks. Charlie Cochran live in the KSRO studio with you every Monday from noon to 12:30. Rachel and I come in here and we field your legal questions. If you have a legal question, you want to give us a call at 636-1350. That's 636-1350. And we'll talk to you about your legal problem and answer your question live on the air. If you don't want to do that, you can just call and talk to Mike, and Mike will relay your question on to us, and we will answer the question. I thought today we would talk a little bit about some of the cases we have going, and you're so used to listening to us talk about automobile accidents. Well, that's not all we do. I mean, automobile accidents are, I got to say, a specialty of mine because I worked for Allstate and Industrial Indemnity and many different insurance companies over 25 years. So I know the insurance companies from the inside. But I can tell you that that's not all we do. When I start reflecting back on my almost 40-year career now, I can tell you there's a lot of cases out there that we work on that are not auto accidents. But feel free to call us if you've been injured through the fault of another, if somebody has run a red light or rear-ended you, or you've been injured in an auto accident. Give us a call down at the office at 544-9006. That's 544-9006. But I thought today we would talk a little bit about some of the other cases we have going in the office. Now, Rachel, you have a lot of experience with the whole subject of sexual harassment, sexual molestation, and the fact is school districts are not immune.
They are not, actually, and a lot of attorneys have no business even trying to handle these cases because they are really, really complicated. Traditionally, government entities, which most school districts are, unless they're private, obviously, have government immunities put in place. As just a side statement, a lot of even private schools will be not subject to private entity law. They may be subject to governmental entity remedies because if they accept any sort of federal funding, say a free lunch program that's paid for by the federal government, there are protections in place for students in those schools, even if they're private. So a lot of people don't even know that. A lot of attorneys don't know that. But it's a really, really complicated area of the law, and a lot of attorneys might tell you that there is no case. And what I'm talking about specifically is the most common is either a teacher or a coach or somebody on the staff of a school will harass or prey upon or just be disgusting towards towards a student. And it's often, say, for example, a male teacher is kind of gross and pervy on a young girl. And that's probably, you know, your most common type of harassment that we see. But there's all kinds of different things. Unfortunately, what I've seen a lot of this past year in particular is there's a lot of really, like, not good things happening to developmentally challenged students. And this happens all the time. And it's particularly egregious because that individual often has no way to protect themselves. So one of the first things you're going to run up against is the school district will, if you try to bring a claim against the school district directly, you're going to get the runaround a lot. And the law is changing so fast in this area because people are starting to step up and say, you know, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And this started hashtag MeToo movement. A lot of movie stars came out and said, you know, I'm tired of being treated, you know, poorly and being, you know, the Harvey Weinstein thing and all that kind of stuff. If you're not up with that, it might be time to have a look at it because it is a huge cultural shift and it's going to take time. time, but the law is starting to catch up. And the first thing that you're going to have to decide right off the bat is whether you want anonymity for these claims for the person who has been harmed. A lot of times they don't want their name published. They feel embarrassed. They feel shamed, which is really unfortunate because what they should feel is victimized and, might I say, angry or upset and say, you know what, this should not be happening. And they need somebody who can step up for them and say, okay, no, this shouldn't be happening. And we're going to make a statement that this should not be happening. But if you want that protection is there for you. And a lot of times, the school district, and I've had this one a couple of times, and recently I've had quite a go around with the school district because I filed a district claim, which I don't have to do, which is another subject, but I filed a claim against the school district and named my client as a doe, which I typically do. And they came back and said, well, how are we supposed to make an inquiry if we don't know the name of your student? And I said, well, I told you who the perpetrator was, and I told you what year it was. So I think you can probably figure out, you know, how many students. You can probably figure out pretty close to narrowing it down to maybe, you know, 12 to 15 students. And since there was a complaint made at the time, I would think you could probably figure it out. So anyway, we went round and round about this. And So what we decided to do with my client's permission was to go ahead and disclose her name. And then the school district came back and said, well, you filed a claim too late. And that was when I really had to just laugh and go, okay, you know what? I'm talking to a human resources director. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Send this to your attorney, because they were completely unaware of the changes in the law regarding the statute of limitations, some of which has just come into law and come into effect. It just became effective January 1st of this year. And there is a law on the books to change that statute of limitations issue even more in favor of the person who has the claim.
I wanted to mention the statute of limitations. The statute of limitations is a statute which limits somebody's ability to make a claim based upon that certain type of cause of action. For example, in negligence, generally, you have to bring your action within 2 years of the negligent act that caused you injury. But when we're talking about minors or disabled people or people that can't understand the concept of the claim, we might be able to lengthen that time.
Right. And typically what has been the law until recently is that if you want to make a claim against the government, say the post office or the police department, or in this case, schools, typically you have 6 months from the date of the injury or the bad act to make a claim, or 6 months from the date of your 18th birthday. So what I had done was this woman came to me about 2 or 3 months before her 18th birthday. She came with her mother, and I said, well, why don't we just wait until you hit 18, and then you can bring the claim yourself, and we don't have to, do the guardian ad litem thing, which just adds another layer of stuff that we don't really need to do.
And that would be appointing her mother to represent her, or a guardian to represent the minor for the cause.
Which it's going to take 2 months anyway, so we would have to do it and then undo it because she would, you know, become an adult. So we decided to wait. She came back to me. I went ahead and filed a claim with the school district. And the only reason I would do that, a lot of attorneys don't know that you don't have to do that, by the way. A lot of attorneys are going to say, yes, you have to make the claim within 6 months of your 18th birthday. You don't have to do that. I chose to do it in this case because I thought I would give this an opportunity. I would give the district an opportunity. I'm not in the business of making schools miserable. I'm really not. I love our schools. I want our schools to do well. I'm not suing the school. They have insurance, of course, but I'm here to see if we can come up with a remedy that, you know, gives some relief. The mother had made a complaint at the time, and the solution given at the time was not adequate at all. So what I'm left with is, what can we do to make this right and make sure it doesn't happen again? Because this particular incident was not an isolated incident. It was not just towards this girl. There were rumors across the school. Other friends of hers have had this happen. This one teacher had been gross to a bunch of 12-year-old girls, and it needs to stop. And when the complaint was made, they didn't do anything to him. They moved her to a different classroom. And to me, that's unacceptable, because this is going to continue. Girls were going home crying, having their parents come and pick them up at school. And that's not okay. And it needs to stop.
I will tell you that if you do have, or if you think you may have one of these claims, you should talk to Rachel. Rachel's got a degree in psychology. She also has kept up with her continuing legal education in these areas, particularly in the area of sexual assault, sexual harassment, and sexual battery. And the fact is, when we're dealing with, it's largely men preying on younger girls, and when you have these kind of cases, it's really important to be able to have an attorney that understands these kind of nuances, particularly in the area of bringing a claim without naming the girl, or the nuances in the statute of limitations versus the government claim, early settlement versus publicity, those kinds of issues. And they're very important to getting involved, particularly when you have one of these male teachers that are preying on the younger girls. Now, Rachel, after the commercial break, we're going to continue to talk about some of the cases we have in our office that are not auto accidents. We do naturally specialize in those, but the bottom line is that we have a lot of different kinds of cases in the office. And if you have a legal question, give us a call down here at the studio at 636-1350. I'm Charlie Cochran with Rachel Erickson, and this is Monday's edition of Ask the Expert.
Hi, this is Scott Barbieri with Wine Spectrum in Santa Rosa. I recently had a personal injury case handled by Charlie Cochran and his legal team. Charlie and his team kept me informed of my case as it went through litigation. And most important, they returned your phone calls. My case successfully settled without trial. If you've been involved in an auto accident, call Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson at 707-544-9006.
Call the legal team of Kornblum, Cochran, Erickson, and Harbison today.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. Folks, I've been helping people obtain the right financing for nearly two decades. This experience has helped hundreds of homeowners get through some challenging situations. Maybe you're a property investor, or how about a first-time home buyer? Divorces are very complicated, and you need my experience to understand what your mortgage options are. Inherited property or rent-to-own agreements are also my specialty. Financing a home is a huge transaction in your life. When combined with a challenging situation, you need the advice and confidence to do it right. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgiadair.com. That's georgiadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and George Adair, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Hi, I'm Jeff Davis of On the Wine Road. If you listen to my show, you've heard that for over 2 years now, Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa have been one of my sponsors. That's just one example that indicates their support for our community. Time and time again, they've come through for customers and their employees and local radio. They're a go local dealership too. I'll tell you, they're the kind of people you'd like to work with when searching for your next sport or luxury vehicle. Smothers, Mercedes, and Volvo Cars on the Corby Auto Road.
It's Ask the Expert with attorneys Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson on Newstalk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO. Ask your legal questions by calling the show at 707-636-1350.
Good afternoon. This is Rachel Erickson with Charlie Cochran on Monday's edition of Ask the Expert. We were just talking a little bit about the liability of schools for sexual harassment, teacher to student, for example. And we are talking today about some of the cases that we do that do not actually involve auto accidents, because we talk about auto accidents and insurance issues often. So today we're talking about some of the other areas that we specialize in and some of the other cases we have going in the office. So, Charlie, I understand you have a product liability case.
Actually, yeah, and I've had many over the years. Product liability are interesting because you are actually suing the manufacturer or the designer of a product, and it usually is defective in its design or it's defective in its manufacture. And the point here is that you're going to be, when you have a product liability case, whether it's a lawnmower or a makeup or some kind of a spear gun or any kind of product.
Or a defective car with a defective ignition, defective tires. The ones you see on TV right now are defective hernia mesh. You see that all the time. So, but this one is a little bit different.
When you're dealing with a product liability case, you're going to be attacking the product. And the problem with attacking the product is the manufacturer and designer of the product will do almost anything they can to make sure that you don't win a product liability case, because that's what they do.
And they have a lot of money to throw at it. The Monsanto cases are a perfect example. If anybody's watched Bluff City Law, that's a new legal show. I watched the pilot to that last night, and they were basically doing a Monsanto roundup case on the show, and that is also a product, and you'll see that there are advertisements on TV for that, as well as the ovarian cancer caused by talcum powder produced by Johnson & Johnson. So you're against big companies with big money that'll throw anything at you to make sure that their product is not brought down, because that'll cost them a bunch of money.
Yeah, and I will tell you that if it's a case that's going to take a lot of money and time, Rachel and I will find you the right lawyers that will actually be able to finance that kind of case.
Oh, and did I find a great one for the Monsanto cases. So if you have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma due to Roundup, please give me a call, because I actually made several phone calls. I had several people calling and saying, hey, you know, do you handle this? And I'm like, that's way outside my pay grade. So I made a concerted effort, talked to several different attorneys, and actually spoke to them, and wouldn't refer a case unless I actually spoke to the attorney, found a great one. So if you have that case, just let me know and I can refer you on.
The point that we've made over and over the last 15 years on this show is that use us as a screening house. I mean, call us at 544-9006 if you think you have a case. Now, if we can't help you, we'll refer you to an army of attorneys that can help you, because we don't do all different kinds of law. As a matter of fact, even the types of law we do, we might be able to have an attorney that can help you better than we can. So use us at 544-9006. The product liability case I took in recently is a motorcycle case where they have the motorcycle actually reared up and just took off on its own. The rider was on the motorcycle and it just took off and screamed through the gears without the motorcyclist doing anything. And he ran into a van and caused severe personal injuries. Well, in that kind of case, you're going to be dealing with, why was the motorcycle defective? What went wrong with that motorcycle? And we're going to be tearing the motorcycle apart. We're going to be photographing it. We've already done a day in the life film of the person that was injured. And all of those things before we even contact the motorcycle designer or manufacturer.
I have a question about that, though, Charlie. Isn't it true that there were that he had bought the same model before and there had been problems before?
He had actually been dealing with this same motorcycle as if it was a lemon on several occasions.
And what does that mean, a lemon?
Under the lemon law, if your vehicle that you purchased from a dealer or from a manufacturer is defective and you keep bringing it back more than 30 days of repair in the first year, that vehicle can be determined to be a lemon under the lemon law, and you may be able to just give your vehicle back and either get another one or get your money back. And so the attorneys that do specialize in lemon law cases will take these cases because the statute under the Song-Beverly Act or under some of the other acts that may apply do give attorneys fees for the lemon vehicle. So
was this motorcycle a lemon?
I believe so. And it's because it was in the shop longer than 30 days in the first year to try to get fixed. And then they gave it back to the guy as if it was okay, and it wasn't okay. So we're going to be dealing with the lemon law. We're going to be dealing with product liability. Then there's also the concept of where do you bring your case? Do you bring your case in federal court? Do you bring it in Alameda where the defendant resides? Do you bring it where he purchased the motorcycle? Or where do you bring it? So that will be dependent upon a tactic that your attorney is looking for as to which venue might be the best place to bring the action.
So so you've got a very badly injured individual. The motorcycle took off without him. So what is he supposed to do now?
He has engaged our law firm to represent him against the motorcycle manufacturer and retailer. And I have engaged an expert witness to take the motorcycle apart. And we have a photographer that's going to watch the dismantling of the motorcycle. And then the expert will render an opinion as to why the motorcycle did that.
And what do you have to prove in a product liability case? I mean, how does that work?
Well, one of two things. One, that the vehicle was either designed improperly. It could be a defect in its design, its fundamental design, or even once it's designed, it could be a flaw in the actual manufacture. In other words, did they follow the plans of the design? And did the motorcycle or the car come off into the public stream of commerce? Did it come to the public in a defective way?
So there's a doctrine in the law called res ipsa loquitur, which means basically in very short terms, it means that something must have gone wrong because this shouldn't have happened. Does that apply here?
It may, because the motorcycle was totally within the control of the manufacturer and designer. This did not happen through the fault or any fault of the plaintiff.
How do you prove that?
Witnesses that actually saw the event happen, and also the circumstances. Our client in this case had been a professional motorcyclist, and he had a whole career of riding motorcycles. So he's not going to just run his motorcycle at 70 miles an hour into a van.
Well, and also you'll probably find something once it's dismantled that'll prove that something went amiss.
Correct. Absolutely. Another kind of case we have in our office a lot of times is an unlawful detainer case. And in this case, we've taken in a case involving commercial unlawful detainer. Now, there's a difference between residential and commercial unlawful detainer. Residential unlawful detainer usually happens because the tenant is not paying rent. And they're usually not paying rent because the landlord is giving them non-habitable premises. In other words, there's something wrong with their premises.
Which I like to take in those cases on behalf of the tenant. I'm happy to do that. I've had lots of those cases. If you're house has broken windows, cockroaches, mice, you know, things that aren't working that are really supposed to.
And I've represented the landlord in many, many cases like that.
And I have a couple of landlords, but mostly tenants. So, but this one's commercial, not residential.
Yeah, and in a commercial unlawful detainer, you actually have to prove that the tenant has breached their lease, and they've actually breached their lease in a fundamental way, and to the detriment of the landlord. So in those kind of cases, the law protects a commercial tenant a lot more than a residential tenant, because the law says, you know, the merchant has probably put a lot of tenant improvements into the tenancy, into the premises, has also got goodwill attached to the location, has a lot of investment into the actual location. So the law is reluctant to kick a commercial tenant out of the premises if they haven't breached the lease. So those are some of the things we're dealing with in commercial unlawful detainers. So we're happy to do that. As I've said, we've taken in many different cases involving sexual harassment over the years. We've had people who worked for, grocery stores and school districts and people, students. We've taken in cases involving tenants that have been harassed by landlords. We've taken in cases involving, it's usually where they are not in the same level of ability to actually deal with the problem. You know, a priest and a penitent, or
a manager and an employee.
A teacher and a student, those kinds of things. So today we've talked a little bit about the different types of cases that we have in the office. If you have a legal problem, use our office as a screening, or actually as a tool. We will refer you on to the right lawyer if we're not the ones to take this case. I'm Charlie Cochran with Rachel Erickson, and this has been Monday's edition of Ask the Expert.